The Right Move,
the property podcast.
And in this episode, I have exclusive news on the best time of year to sell your house.
And you know, that is why you're an expert, Simo. It is the podcast that gives you really clear and useful information on property. You might be selling, buying or investing, all three in fact. Now, let's be clear, Simo, this isn't at the moment a good point to be selling a house. It is a great time.
Yeah, it is a great time. And we'll talk about that in a bit. When are the best times to sell your house? And as you say, now is a great time, but we'll give you a bit more on that later on.
Excellent news, I fear, as well, on the guest front. We've got the CEO of the Guild of Property Professionals. And you know, well, you know a lot about this, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're a guild member in both my offices. And I think being a guild member is quite important. And it's an element of exclusivity. And I'm sure Ian will talk to us a bit about that when he comes on shortly.
Ian McKenzie on the podcast soon. And Charlie Says with Charlie Lambdin, obviously, scrutinising a story driven by, I think I'm right in saying, the largest agency in London. And it's about renters in the smoke, I think is the technical term.
I don't know whether Charlie's going to hold back in this one. We invited him back, but, you know, after the last episode. But yes, let's hear from Charlie. It's always great to hear from Charlie, isn't it? Charlie's an absolute authority, and we are absolutely thrilled to have Charlie working with us on these little snippets.
Yeah, these are really great opinion pieces for anybody that wants that sort of broader view of the sector and stacks and stacks of integrity as well in Charlie Says. And just lastly, so we're going to dip into something that affects landlords as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, landlords are, you know, there's lots of reasons that people go into becoming a landlord. Some accidental landlords, they've inherited a property and don't know what to do with it. Some see it as an investment for a pension. But many manage their lets themselves. And we're seeing a lot of landlords now look for managed service. And we'll talk about that as well and why landlords should be looking to professionals to manage their properties.
You're not wrong.
Subscribe to us now on all major podcast apps.
Let's start then with what I think, Simo, is cracking news. You'd like to think so. You know, you don't switch on the telly, radio, etc., and hear a great deal of good news at the moment and latterly. But a great story if your house is on the market or about to be.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, we always say that the spring is when the market picks up as a general rule. And I'm seeing that at the moment. I actually, funnily enough, I spoke to Charlie the other day and he phoned me when I was this isn't about name dropping Charlie Lambdin here, but he phoned me when I was in a valuation. I phoned him back when I came out and I said, I've gone from absolute nothing happening, you know, no valuations, no not many viewings, to being run this week, particularly off my feet. And actually that kind of, you know, fits in quite well with this article that's saying between sort of mid-Feb and the end of June are actually not just good, but they're great times to sell a property. And in fact, it goes to say that which are the bad times, and bad times at the beginning of January, you know, people just coming back, recovering from Christmas, middle of August. Well, of course, you know, August is typical holiday season, and of course December when we all close down and drink various things and eat and be merry, between now and the end of June is billed as an absolutely great time to sell a property, not only because of how it can be perceived with photography and things, you know, with the flowers and the leaves coming up on the trees, but also it's that time of year when everybody is getting that sort of, you know, vibe for the summer. It's all getting a bit more, you know, we're coming out of the winter. And in fact, just to put a little bit of a stat on this, you know, the average length of time or number of days, should I say, to sell a house, this is the average, and this is from Rightmove data. So portal data in March, the average, now, you know, sometimes this could be less, sometimes it could be more, but the average is 57 days to sell a property. And the worst time being October / November, the average is elongated to 79 days to sell. And the worst time they are suggesting is specifically October the 14th to November the 14th. So some very interesting stats there. We're recording this in, what are we, sort of early to mid-March. Now is the time to go and sell, get your house listed. And, I've had, even today, likely to be three instructions from valuations on just the one day today, which is nice. But we have, as we've been talking about, we have been coming out of a particular gloomy time. And, you know, this isn't about prices, of course, and things like that. This is about the number of people looking and everything else. So this isn't to say that prices are still sticking. In fact, you know, I'm very vocal about that alongside Charlie, that prices are reining back quite considerably. So, yeah, now is a great time. So speak to your agent, decide what you want to do and get your house on the market.
Yeah, call me, but seriously, do. It's not very often you're wrong, but you're right again. This whole... The whole spring into summer thing makes everything look better. Like you say, property photography, it blooms, you know, particularly exteriors come into their own, flowers out and stuff like that, and obviously brighter weather when it's not snowing. But I noticed within that, it said, you know, the obvious thing, the longer you stay on the market, the lower your selling price. So being a great time of year should shorten that and therefore good price, Simo, I'm guessing.
Yes, but it's not quite as exact the science as that, of course. You know, the market works in different ways in different parts of the country. So everything that I talk about in one part of the country is very different to another. So, you know, you really have to take that with a slight pinch of salt. But I, as we all know, you know, I have two high street agency independent branches, one in at one side of the north of Bristol and one in the south of Bristol. And I'll be honest with you, every time one branch is busy, the other is quiet, without fail. And that is just because of the way the market works. And, you know, take North Somerset. We're getting a great big pull from South Bristol to move out to rural areas. And the market in South Bristol is a bit stale at the moment. And, you know, a lot of my buyers are then drying up. But... You know, I talk to people who are looking to move, for example, to Devon, but the Devon market's booming. And, you know, friend of the show, Nick Chabat, who's doing very well in around North Devon. You know, people are moving to those areas from all around the country. It's not just a pull from a specific area. So that means that market is generally buoyant. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like houses on the Costa. If the British economy is in recession, the German economy might not be. So
yeah,
still buying. And that's how the sort of rural Devon market is. Anyway, the crux of the point is that now is an absolutely great time to sell your property, and specifically March.
You are with The Right Move, the property podcast. Ian McKenzie sets out very soon what the Guild of Property Professionals does. But before we get to Ian... Oh, what's Charlie's angle in a nutshell? What's caught his eye, Simo?
Well, Guy Gittings, the CEO of Foxtons in London, has effectively, you know, in a nutshell, said if you can't afford the rent that's going up, then you'll have to find somewhere else to rent that's not London. So, interesting piece of audio coming up from Charlie.
Charlie says.
So yeah, interesting week for Foxtons, not only publishing the results, but also announcing their purchase of that lettings agent, Atkinson McLeod, who used to be one of my clients, funnily enough. Nice guys they were. Yeah, it was a punchy performance. And what it made me think is that since Foxtons went public some years ago, it kind of lost its mojo. It was a ferocious sales organization, and it's become a bit corporate and chubby and lazy. And Guy Gittins cut his teeth at Foxtons when he started an agency 20 years ago, and he's come back into the job as CEO from CEO of Chesterton's. So he's clearly a performer. And so he's coming back in as the boss of Foxtons, having learnt his trade during arguably what were Foxtons' most aggressive years. And if I was another agent in London now, I'd be looking out, because he's going to be driving market share. They're going to get very, very aggressive with their market share. And I would predict seeing them increase their market share under his leadership based on what I've seen so far. His comments on rentals, I mean, whilst they were perhaps arguably insensitive for tenants who can't afford their rent in London or tenants who can't afford to find a place in London, they weren't wrong. You know, he did say it was regrettable, but he said that the people who can't afford to live in the more central areas they want to live are going to have no choice but to move further out. You know, it's not a nice thing to hear, but I played it back a couple of times, and actually, he's right. That hurts, but it's true. That's the case. I have heard anecdotally that there are areas of London where the rents have peaked. They've stopped rising. I don't think we're going to see significant falls soon, but I do think we may have seen the top of the rent increases. For advertised rents on properties that are up for rent to be advertising price reductions would signal that the real frothiness of the rental market may be coming to an end.
Selling, buying, investing. Are you making the right move?
Eloquent and insightful thoughts, as always, from the excellent Charlie Lambden. Yeah. Right, guest time. You're a great advocate for this organisation, the Guild of Property Professionals.
Yeah, it's great. The Guild give the agents that they select in the locality, and I'm very pleased that they've selected both of my businesses to represent them in their locations. And you know, there's a whole host, and being a guild member is quite a select club, really, and it gives us some credibility over our competition. And yeah, I'm really pleased that we've got Ian coming on, and you know, hopefully he'll explain the benefits of guild membership to the wider the public that don't really understand or don't know what the reason is to be a member. So yeah, let's bring Ian on now.
Hi everybody, I'm Ian McKenzie. I'm the CEO of the Guild of Property Professionals.
Ian, yeah, so you know, of course I'm a guild member, and you know, I understand the benefits of membership, but what about those outside of everything? How would you explain its advantages to them?
Well, it's the ultimate question, isn't it? And having been a guild member for nearly a decade in Winchester as an estate agent is one that I do feel that I'm particularly well-versed in answering. So the Guild is a network of over 800 best-in-class independent estate agents, all of whom are handpicked by us as the leading agent in their area, not necessarily by market share, but by a combination of different factors, and are all given exclusivity within their territory to use the brand, the selection process, and the many services that the Guild offer to gain commercial advantage over their competitors. In so doing, they're offering their customer base part of the selection training that has been recognized by Cambridgeshire Trading Standards as being appropriate training for an independent estate agent, and tools and services that will further their distribution and contact with buyers and sellers throughout their region. Plus, of course, the referral system that sits on top of that. But there's lots to discuss already.
What about those who don't yet know about what you do? You know, to make the house buying public aware of the Guild, is that half the battle?
Yes and no. I think if you were to ask the general public, have they heard of Property Mark, they probably may say yes or may say no. I shouldn't lead the witness on that. If you'd ask many people, have they heard of RICS, then you may get a different answer. Have they heard of Trading Standards? The answer would be very definitely yes. So many trade bodies within all sectors are not necessarily known to the general public. The beauty of the Guild is that once brought to life by the member itself, and having done this in the living room, as I say, for nearly a decade, the consumer really resonates with the theory behind the network and actually the benefits that it delivers. So it is partly self-promoting. One of the arguments I always say, Andrew, is that Aptol and Atoll don't actually advertise themselves, but when you're booking a holiday, you look for the seal of trust, effectively. And that's the same with the best guild members that promote the guild membership to its full, because the general public actually recognize an organization and an entity that train, develop, protect both the member through compliance, etc., and also the consumer.
There are three words I noticed, Ian, that come up that characterise what a guild member effectively stands for. So knowledge, integrity and results. Can you just kind of give us a little bit of an overview about the practical ways that you can ensure those joining the guild and representing the guild really embody that?
Of course. Let me break them down into their parts then, if I may. So knowledge. We have a members hub with thousands of documents on it. That doesn't, of course, bring it to life. But certainly all around training, legislation, and compliance. We've got, in my opinion, Paul Offley, the best compliance officer in the entire sector, that every single week is updating our members. We call it Conflicts and Compliance, which is a very strange name. But every Wednesday morning at breakfast time, he sends a video of the latest topic, the latest watch-out area that's come across his desk in terms of compliance. Regular AML training, regular compliance, really helping out the guild members. There's a helpline that's available to all guild members from that perspective. In addition to knowledge, there is the guild associate scheme that we encourage every single member to pass. That, as I've already said, is recognized by Cambridgeshire Trading Standards as a level of training that is suitable for all estate agents that are customer interfacing. And then they get a photo ID card as a consequence of passing that exam to say, look at me, Mr. and Mrs. General Public, or Miss. Here I am. I've taken the exams. I understand what I'm talking about. There's constant development available to guild members in terms of ongoing trainings, etc., podcast weekly, etc., etc. In terms of the standards that we deliver, again, that's the same area in terms of training, compliance, overseeing. We do spot checks monthly to make sure that members are up to speed in terms of their websites, etc. And of course, there is, if the general public were to need some additional assistance, there is also, of course, a complaints procedure, which works alongside the Ombudsman. It is worth saying that the Guild Code of Conduct, so every single Guild member to enable them to join, has to sign a Code of Conduct. Interestingly, it was the first ever Code of Conduct that was introduced into the property sector before the Ombudsman. And as a consequence of that, we have a complaints procedure to protect the general public if they feel that a Guild member has done wrong. And that will be investigated independently of the Ombudsman and independently of the estate agency member. So really just clear delivery of standards to the member. In addition to that, from an integrity perspective, we offer our guild members PI insurance, a group PI insurance, which according to our insurers is one of the best in the industry in terms of the lack of claims against it, he says, touch wood. And so all of those things just offer this kite mark of trust, integrity, and then and moving on to the results. The results are borne out by their own levels in that if the guild were a branded entity in the UK, it would be the second largest entity with just over 6% of all UK sales delivered through the guild network. And that's through from a sales perspective, not necessarily lettings, but from a sales perspective. So with the exception of Connells Countrywide, which is technically many, many more branches, we actually hold a market share of just over 6% of all units that transact per year.
With that area exclusivity, does that mean there's a bit of a competitive battle then to become a guild member for a specific location?
Yeah, we do have vacancies because, as you know, as you sort of alluded to already, it's sometimes things are the best kept secret in the industry, and I certainly believe that the guild is one of those. But we have more applications to join the guild on a monthly basis, many, many more than we can actually facilitate, because we are true to our word that we will only have one agent per location. And so, yes, it is a frustration from a growth perspective, but so reassuring that we do have many people that would like to join. So that works very well.
I noticed from the Guild's website as well that when you listen to the house buying public, the home buying public, yes, of course, occasionally there will be a sentiment that isn't great around agencies, but... and I hasten to add non-guild members at this stage, but also conveyancing seems to, you know, can quite often throw a spanner in the works. But the guild in its own way kind of helps to look after that, doesn't it, and foster a better outcome and better relationships with conveyancing specialists.
Yeah, we certainly try. I mean, it's really important to think about with the conveyancing process is that the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. Mm. And within the conveyancing process, on average in the UK, you've got 4.6 units on average per conveyance. per chain. And if you think about the conveyancing situation, you've got a buyer and a seller. You've got a buyer solicitor and a seller solicitor, and then you've got a lender and a surveyor involved in the middle. So for each transaction, you've got six people that you could argue are diametrically opposed to each other in terms of their aspirations and wishes. So times six by 4.6, you've got 25 odd people that actually in one chain have different agendas. So it is very difficult to regulate and to make this a smooth running piece. Having said that, the Guild do have preferred suppliers that we have vetted that look for independent conveyances to be on a network with relationships. And we do have SLAs, service level agreements, that we try to hold them to. And of course, the power of the Guild is that you're not just a one-man band in a town, as I was in Winchester. It can be a lonely place. You actually have the voice of a larger entity where people can come to me or talk to Chris McLean, my managing director, and we take up the fight on their behalf. So it is the economy of scale in one respect and also the escalation of scale in the other.
So the Guild auctions, just take us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. We partner with IM Property Group. So it's a digital online offering. The IM Group are a fabulous company, and I know the chaps there very well. So they call it the modern method of selling, in terms of a property is put to the market via that platform, distributed through the traditional marketing portals and the unique guild technology, etc., that we have in terms of digital marketing, etc. But then the buyer is requested to make an offer either by a certain day or tender online, and in most instances, the seller not paying the fee, but the buyer paying a purchasing fee to reserve the property. It does still then transact through the standard conveyance process, but with requirements in terms of they would reserve the property, they place a deposit, which is a percentage of the agreed selling price, and then they have time to complete thereafter. So it's not the traditional auction in an auction room where the gavel goes down and you've technically exchanged contracts. It's a combination of the two.
There are so many analysts, researchers, correspondents, people that, you know, have their own social media outlets that are forecasting a wide range of possible price drops, and, you know, housing price drops. How do you and the Guild sit? You know, what do you feel about it at the moment? Are you optimistic, pessimistic, or kind of sat somewhere in the middle?
There is no doubt that the market conditions are changing. Mm-hmm. There is, although the headline data is actually painting a relatively robust market conditions for the first 7 weeks, it is changing. Behaviours of estate agents need to change, because it is no longer a scenario where properties will fly off the shelves. I think the stats are that 87% of homes last year sold through the first agent, and now it's 60% of properties are selling through the second agent. So you could argue back to a more traditional marketplace. My view on price is, if I were to be flippant, it would be that price doesn't matter. And that is a flippant comment, in that, of course, it matters to individuals that are near equity in terms of their mortgage, their loan to value, etc. But the technical answer is that my belief is that the UK is tracking at 8%, or it was tracking at the beginning of this year, 8% above the mean average of house price growth over the last 25 years. And as a consequence of that, I think it will come back probably 7 or 8% this year, which in the grand scheme of things only actually takes it back to January or February of last year in terms of pricing. The watch out for me is transactional volume. We'll end last year, by the time the analysis comes out, at circa 1.2, 1.25 million transactions last year. And it is, what level of transactions will we see complete this year? Because I've heard figures ranging from 870,000 to 900,000 to 1 million. Now, that represents a 25 to 30% drop in terms of transactional volume. And that's the thing that agents should be mindful of in terms of the size of the pie, the infamous size of the pie. If the pie is diminishing, what are you doing to either A, increase your slice of that, or B, get better fees that actually represent the value of you and your company in terms of the service that you offer to your customer?
And ultimately, I suppose, Ian, that, you know, whatever conditions, however conditions fluctuate as time goes by, at least certainly for your members, they know they've got the support, guidance, and that almost, I suppose, fellowship of the Guild, which I'm sure you won't argue with.
100%. And every Monday morning, we send our members to the Monday morning meeting, which is, if we were running a business, what would we be focusing on this week? So lots of tips and tools, and lots of, you know, in a marketplace like that we're in, you need to be overt in terms of your marketing strategies. And one of the things that we do to drive results for them is really do help them with automation of services, because time is one of the most valuable commodities that any business has. But also efficiencies in terms of, when you get an opportunity, here's how you convert it. So there's lots of traditional marketing tools that we give them, magazines, etc., but also digital tools, portal interceptors, email distributions, etc., etc.
Ian, it's been absolutely great to chat, and thanks so much for your time and coming on to The Right Move.
Okay, let's tee up the last thing that we're homing in on the podcast, Simo. And then this is an article on lettingagenttoday.co.uk, not written by just anyone. Oh no, sir, by Graham Norwood, who is, and I quote, property commentator of the year, overall property journalist of the year, property trade magazine journalist of the year, and property columnist of the year. This guy knows what he's talking about.
And he is property journalism royalty here, JP. So, but the article that he's written is bang on the money, because, you know, we are seeing landlords switching over to having a managed service. And there are a load of reasons for that. There are quite a few elderly landlords who have had their investment for a long time and now really can't cope with all the complexities of managing their own property. How do landlords increase their rent annually without support of a letting agent that knows the market? And it also goes in to say why landlords are thinking of selling as well. It's not just about moving to a managed service, but yeah, it's a really interesting article and very well written. It's quite true, very, very true to current situation.
Landlords, which is quite a broad sweeping term anyway, don't always get a great rap. But actually, do you know what? Particularly reading Graham's article, I personally feel for some landlords, because, I mean, and I'll quote Graham here, it says, over a quarter of landlords, in fact, 27%, would switch to a letting agency to avoid scams and fraud. False information and fraud in applications is the leading reason potential tenants are rejected. It is an absolute minefield.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see this through our referencing process. I only last year had somebody come in and offer me a backhander to let the property to them. Not any backhander, quite a considerable one, to which I obviously said, excuse me, there's the door. But I have a case at the moment which we manage and we're dealing with through solicitors and things like that, of someone who hasn't paid rent, and we're dealing with that properly. Now, the landlords who have that problem don't know what to do and where to turn. So yes, there's a lot of scams and fraud. There's a huge amount of anti-money laundering situation that we have to go through with that now. So supervision from HMRC. You've got here, like, you know, another point that Graham makes is there's landlords' anxieties around the unstable buy-to-let market. So some landlords have actually inherited properties and don't really know. They just say, okay, well, we'll keep that as an investment for the rent. And they don't do any work on them. And then, you know, all of a sudden it comes to, we've got this big bill to have to make, a new kitchen, new bathroom, redecoration, etc., etc. But they've been receiving the rent and just letting it sit there. And some young landlords who have, in recent years, where the rates have been so good for buy-to-lets, they've decided to invest a small amount of capital as a deposit. And then they've gone to, they've mortgaged a buy-to-let. And then now with the rate changes, Those mortgages are becoming unsustainable, maybe not so much on an interest-only mortgage, but where they've got repayment buy-to-let mortgages, frankly, some of them, the mortgage is more than the rent received. So there's loads of reasons, and we talked about it, didn't we, the other week, where we've got landlords potentially having to go through and become qualified before they can become landlords or before they're allowed to rent. And things like that are just burdens on landlords. And yes, you're right, you know, you do feel for those people. But I have to say, some landlords have had it too good for too long. And that might be controversial, me saying that. But, you know, really, a lot of people, certainly those that need support now, have potentially not invested in those properties, and they have creamed off the rent and not really supported their tenants. I have experienced that where some of my landlords who've transferred to a managed service have questioned the work that needs to be done to their properties with careful explanation and a good, nice hand-holding by yours truly, of course. And we can do that. No. Hey, did you see, I've got to remind you of this. Did you see the review that I got the other day? It was brilliant. I've not had a review. Somebody even said in a review that we were very, very professional and it was interjected with sense of humour from Andrew. I was like, me? Me?
Well, did they mention the hand-holding as well?
It was just that great sense of humour. But it was an anonymous home seller. And the thing is, it's all very well saying you're anonymous, but I know who it is.
Yeah, but you could kind of narrow it out. Yes, you can run, but you can't hide. Just quickly to say, before we go, Sim, a couple of things that obviously you don't need to be, inside the sector to get that kind of quality information from the likes of Graham and his colleagues. Lettingagent.co.uk is the website, lettingagent.co.uk. Fantastic and informative articles on there. And next time on the podcast, the next episode, it's property with wheels, Simo, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Do you know, I'm really, really pleased that we've got our guest coming on. I have to say, JP, we've been working on this guest for quite some time. It is a leading authority on the motorhome world. It's going to be really, really interesting because it is property linked. There are many people going nomadic now, and with the modernised, and they're no longer this just caravan that's been bolted onto a van chassis. Some of these motorhomes are absolutely out of this world, aren't they? You know, hundreds of thousands of pounds these things cost these days. And it's going to be a really, really good chat.
He will be on with us next time. All I'll say, Simo, is #van life. Until next time.
10-4, JP.